Okay, we'll start. We've been talking about a book named The Garden. And I think, did they get a reading? No?
I don't know.
Supposed to be you get a reading from it. I don't know. Did they? No?
We do it after class.
Huh? Oh, after class. Okay. Anyway, you'll get it later. It's a chapter in a book about, it's a book about a young man who gets to meet the great masters of ancient Indian Buddhism and early Tibetan Buddhism in a special garden at night. And we've reached a scene in which he's learning about the way of life of a warrior. And in this chapter so far, I don't know if you remember, but he's been walking with this master, I think it's a Sangha. Is that Winston? I don't remember. Anyway. First they're walking through the garden, and a Sangha pushes him or knocks him a bit. And he's like a little bit perturbed, and he's like, what are you doing? And he says, look, you almost stepped on this bug, you know? And then he looks at the bug, and he has this big, he's been studying about emptiness and karma, and he has this big realization about karma. And he says, so I saved the bug's life, right? And a Sangha, isn't a Sangha, but anyway, he says, yeah. And then he says, no, I didn't, because if the bug had the karma to be saved, it doesn't matter if I move my foot or not, you see? This is an argument you hear, and it's a question you might have about karma. So, yeah, I didn't want to step on the bug, and you pushed me, and so my foot didn't come down on the bug's head, and so I didn't kill the bug. But really, who didn't kill the bug? The bug didn't kill the bug, okay? According to the laws of karma, the bug, you know, there was an incident in the past where someone almost died, and then the bug took some action and saved that person, and then because of that, they collected the karma to, at the moment of the imminent death, someone pushes the person who's about to kill them. So then the young man starts to get this wrong view, and wrong views are the worst thing in Buddhism. He starts to get a wrong view that he says, well, then it doesn't really matter whether I try to save anybody or not, because if I save them, it's because they had the karma to be saved. So why am I going around trying not to step on bugs? I should just step on them. And if they had the karma to be saved, they'll get between the heel and the sole, you know? And if they don't, well, that was their karma. You know what I mean? And then Sangha gets angry. He says, you know, that's the most stupid thing I ever heard of. You know, of course you have to try to save the bug. And of course it's not you who saves the bug. And there's no contradiction there. And you have to get used to that. If you're going to be a karmaist, if you're going to live your life by the laws of karma, which hopefully you want to, you have to get used to this apparent contradiction. Yeah, you can't save the bug. If you don't step on the bug, and if the bug's life gets saved, you can't take credit for it. If you see someone being mugged on the street, and you run and help them, and they get and the mugger runs away, and this person says, oh, thank you, you know. You say, no, don't worry, you did it yourself. That's true. They did do it themselves. Okay. What if they didn't have the karma to be saved? The mugger would stab you too, and kill them. Okay. Does that ever happen?
Yeah,
it does. Okay. That proves that your action doesn't protect the person. It's something other energy is protecting the person. Okay. Does that mean we shouldn't help anyone getting mugged? That's the big question. You see, that was the precipice that the young man was about to fall off of. He almost got this wrong view, and then a Sangha, you know, says, don't do that, you know, meaning, yeah, you still have to try to do the right thing. Why? For your karma. It's the right thing to do for you. You see, I mean, you have to do it. You have to do it. What happens if you don't do it? I mean, this is not a reason not to do it, but what happens if you don't do it? You'll get mugged later, okay? Somebody will watch you as you get mugged, you see what I mean? And say, oh, that's her karma. You know what I mean? You see, I mean, you have to get used to that contradiction. I'll repeat it. It's true that if you try to help someone who's being hurt by someone else, whether you succeed or not is only up to their karma, okay? But that doesn't mean that you don't try. You have to try because it's the right thing to do, to protect life. You have a vow to do that. And only by protecting life can you reach your own Buddha paradise. You see what I mean? So you have to do it. And only after you've reached the Buddha paradise can you really help other people. So you have to do it. But you have to do it with that in mind. Then you don't get upset about what? When it doesn't work. Okay? Then you don't get upset about it. There's nothing to be upset about if it doesn't work. That was determined by things that happened long before. That was determined by the karma of that person. It had nothing to do with you. You don't have to get upset about it. You should be happy that you did the right thing. The karma is the same, whether or not you protect them in actuality at all. Get it? Okay? Your karma of attempting to protect life is the same, whether or not you succeed. Okay, there's this famous statement in Master Shantideva. He says, did the Buddhas perfect giving? Yes or no? Yes. Perfection of giving. Yeah, they did it. They've achieved it. They are the best at giving. Okay, so are there no more poor people in the world? They say, no, of course, there's many poor people. So then they didn't perfect giving. You see, I mean, that's not the answer. That's not how it comes out. You perfect the act of saving life if you try to save life. Whether or not you succeed is up to things that happened a long time ago. You still have to do it. And when you're willing to risk your life happily and freely on any occasion, you've perfected the protection of life, respecting life. It has nothing to do with whether you actually succeed or not in protecting life, okay? Nothing to do with that. And you have to get used to that. That's applicable to about half the Dharma things you ever try. Okay, like you're finally able to do something noble and then it screws up. And then you feel like, well, why should I try? You know, it's just karma's running the show. I can't do anything. You can't think like that. You have to try to collect the karma to save life. Okay? But that's not what we're talking about tonight. So then they're walking by this little stream, and who is it? Master Shantideva or something? I don't know. Gives them a big shove. And this time he goes falling over the stream, the rocks, he bashes his leg on the rocks, he gets his pants wet, you know, and he's like, what did you do that for? You know, you're supposed to be this compassionate Buddhist monk, and you just shoved me across this little river and almost broke my leg, and now you're laughing about it, you know. And he says, don't worry, I'll take care of you. And he goes and sits under a palm tree, which is like off a few, maybe like 20 feet away or something like that. And he sits down there and he says, you know, take off your shoes, let me have them. I'll take him, you know, I'll dry him for you. He takes his shoes, he goes, sits under this palm tree. And then he says, come on over, sit with me, and we'll talk about why I pushed you, you know. And the young man starts walking towards him, and then he realizes that he's led him through a briar patch. And in the desert, these are called stickers. They get hard, you know, the sun dries them out, and they have these really sharp points, like very painful. So he's got him halfway through the briar patch and stranded him there without his shoes, and he's totally soaked, and he's starting to get angry at this Buddhist master, you know. He says, what kind of Buddhist master are you, you know? First you push me in the water, then you take my shoes, and then you make me walk in this patch. And so they're having this conversation while he's picking these things out of his feet, still standing in the stickers, okay? And this whole conversation takes place there. And he starts to get angry. The young man starts to get angry. He says, you don't even want to help me? You know, you're sitting there, you're waiting for me to get there, you got me here, I can't go back, I can't go forward. What are you doing? Why are you doing this to me? And he starts getting more and more angry. And then they start discussing anger. You know, and he wanted to teach him about anger. It's called tapkepa. Tapkepa means skillful means to teach a student, sometimes by causing them a small pain so that they can avoid a big pain later. Okay? And that gets into the discussion of anger. And this is the third way of a warrior, okay? It's avoiding anger. Say Serpa. Serpa. If you misspell it, it's Zopa, and poor Lama Zopa got stuck with that, okay? Serpa means, it's translated as patience. I don't like that translation. It's more like the art of not getting angry when the time has come to get angry. To me, patience means the ability to sit in a doctor's office or wait for a bus or something like that. It's not like that. Patience means when that one person in your life who can push your buttons pushes just the right way, do you get angry or not? At that very moment, when they do the thing that most makes you... You know who I'm talking about, you know? There's one person or two people in your life, maybe they're competing, but there's one person who can say a thing to you. You can be having a great day. You can be very Buddhist. You can be being very holy, sacred person all day long. And then suddenly this person, they just say one sentence to you. And then you're totally out of control. Your mind is just, you don't even recognize yourself. And it's embarrassing. You know, you've been practicing for 25 years. And here's this one person who can just set you off like that. You know, just you think you're doing really good. and you think you've finally started to control your mind, and then suddenly one sentence and boom, you're angry. You know, boom, you got this thing coming up in you. And that's called control. And sopa is its opposite. Sopa is the art of stopping anger at the moment that it, you know, in me, when I get angry, and I didn't used to get angry, you know, normally you have one of two problems, desire or anger, okay? And my problem used to always be desire. You know what I mean? Like, I like to eat ice cream, 3 bowls of ice cream at one time. You know, to be famous, like to be well thought of, looking at girls in the bus station and then trying not to look at them. And, you know, this is used to be my problem. Now I got this other problem as I got older. I don't know what it is, 40 years old or something, 45, something like that. But you start to get short-tempered with people. And it's like totally out of my nature, and I'm starting to do it all the time. And I don't know what it is, but you just start to lose your capacity to put up with irritating people and irritating things. And I don't know if it's a thing of age or what. I don't know what it is. But this is the other great half of people's character, you know, which is this sudden thing. And when I get it, I get an actual thrill up my gut, you know, like there's this thing that comes up. It starts down here, and within about 2 seconds it goes like this, and then I say something. Usually it's not, I'm a Buddhist teacher, I'm not supposed to yell at people. People around me swear I yell at them all the time. I never raise my voice, you know. It's this quiet, sarcastic, you know, could you break that cup again, or, you know what I mean, or, you know, or something like that, you know what I mean, and then they hear it as yelling, you see what I mean, and it's meant to be that, and sopa is about studying how to stop that, and studying how to be able to control your anger, okay. Controlling desire is a long-term thing. Controlling desire takes years and years of practice with the objects that you have desire for. It takes a long time to learn not to eat a whole pizza or a whole gallon of ice cream if you're exposed to it, you know, by yourself, and it's soft, you can dig it up, and, you know, it takes years to get to that. I mean, and it's sort of a long-term battle. Like, you can fight all night about the ice cream or TV or whatever. You know, turn it off, turn it on, turn it off, turn it on. Anger, you have like 3 seconds to do something. Anger is totally different. You have only a few seconds to respond. Okay, and there's two methods in Buddhism for dealing with anger. Okay, one is called like a band-aid approach, where you use some kind of tricks to prevent anger or to deal with your anger, and the other is like the ultimate approach. Okay, and I'd like to talk about both. And we'll get into the different kinds of sopa. I'll give you the 3 kinds. Okay, first one is say Nepala, Jiminyamba. Nepala, Jiminyamba. Nepa means somebody hurts you, or something hurts you. There's a problem. La means about that. Jiminyamba means don't worry about it. Jiminyamba is an idiom. It's like, yeah, I don't mind. Jiminyamba means I don't mind. I don't mind that somebody hurts me. You see what I mean? And that's, by the way, a kind of reaction to the things that you would normally be angry about, which can take 2 forms. One is aimed at people, which is the most common object of anger, and the second one is aimed at things, like traffic jams, or the weather, or you just broke a cup, or something like that. So you got to realize that in Buddhism, anger is defined as those feelings of irritation both at living creatures and at inanimate objects. So it's just as destructive to feel anger about a traffic jam as it is to feel anger about something that somebody said to you. Okay? What do I mean destructive? And to really study anger and to appreciate the study of anger, the first step is to study its destructive effects on the human, on a human being. Okay? What's so bad about anger? The opening lines of Master Shantideva's Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life say that 1 minute's anger at a very holy person can destroy the good deeds you've done for millions of years. Okay? I mean, that's, and then there's this debate in the monastery. We debate it night after night. You know, is this a literal or is this an exaggeration? And it's not an exaggeration. You know that you can have, you know, sort of good relations with somebody for years, and then in one night of true anger, you know, in one night where you really let it out and you say all these horrible things, that once they come out of your mouth, you can't take them back. You know, you can't say, can you pretend you didn't hear that? You know what I mean? You can't, and you know, you've been wanting to say it for a while, and then it finally came out of your mouth, and then there's no way to retract it. You can destroy the friendship of a lifetime in 10 minutes of true anger. You know, in 10 minutes of sincere anger, you can destroy a whole lifetime's relationship with somebody, and people do it. And then normally that leads to a second event and a third event, and it just goes downhill from there. So anger has this effect. One good moment of powerful anger at a very holy being can destroy millions of years of good deeds. They say, that's what the scriptures say. Then the tantric scriptures say something else, okay? And that's very interesting. I can't teach you the details because tantra means secret, and secret is secret, as Rinpoche always said. But you should know the other effect of anger, and that's that basically you have some kind of inner spiritual plumbing, okay? You have these pipes of all through your body that are invisible to a normal eye. They are physical, but they're very subtle, almost like the body of a spirit or something. They are physical, but you can't see them very well. And they transmit energy throughout your body. And they form, as the fetus forms in the mother's womb, these channels or pipes throughout your body. So you have a whole separate nervous system, and it looks like the nervous system throughout your body. And there's a central part of it that goes from here down your backbone inside down to here. And that's called central channel. And you have sort of a vital energy that flows through your body. It's called prana in Sanskrit, chi in Chinese, lung in Tibetan. And there's this energy, and it's almost like a spiritual, physical energy that runs through your body. And if you're thinking sweet thoughts, this energy is flowing very well, okay? Because the energy is connected to your thoughts. As your thoughts go, so goes the energy. So goes the energy, okay? So if your thoughts are particularly holy, calm, compassionate, then this wind, this energy is flowing very evenly to your body. On the outside, that's reflected in how you breathe, okay? The inner winds are connected to your breath. And in Tibetan, the word is the same. If you're translating a tantric scripture, it gets a little confusing because the word lung means the inner spiritual energy going through this channel, and it also refers to your physical breath, okay, which are not the same thing. But if the inner winds are moving in a sweet, normal flow, then the breathing is reflected in it. I always talk about a sitar. I used to play sitar, and it's got all these sympathetic strings under the keyboard. So there's like, to tune it is a disaster. It takes like, to really tune for a concert takes about an hour. And you have to tune all these tiny little strings under the keyboard and you have to change them for each raga. So each time you play a different raga, you have to retune the whole thing. And they're tuned to a certain scale. And then you go and tune the top ones. And then you have to test it. And the frets are movable. They're held on by little pieces of string. So the whole thing can go out of tune. I mean, you have to move all the fret, you know, like 20 frets around until the whole thing's... And the way you test it is you hit the top note, and then two sympathetic strings should go off. And that's why it sounds so, you know. Because really, when you hit one string, you're hitting three or four strings. They go off like in an echo chamber. So if it's tuned right, and you just hit one note, three strings go off below. You see what I mean? Your breathing and your inner winds are the same. You see what I mean? They are sympathetically related. So if your inner energy is going well, then your breathing reflects that. You see? And then you're breathing nice, calm, deeply, uninterrupted, like that. What happens if the opposite happens? If you get upset, and especially if you get angry, then there are these choke points. They're like five choke points in the body. And that, they're called chakras. People think it's a very beautiful, sexy thing, chakras. They're actually deadly choke points where there's a certain like a knot. And when you get angry or upset, or when you feel strong desire in a wrong way, then or jealousy or anything like that, then there's this choking sensation on that energy. And the energy gets choked. And then what happens to your breath? You start breathing. You know, you're getting angry. And that's a sign that something on the inside is being choked. You see? It's a sympathetic thing. That gets choked. You have a bad thought. That chokes. And then the wind chokes. And then the breath chokes. You see what I mean? And every time you do that, it hurts your body a little bit. Okay? Every time you do that, every single time there's a 1 second or a 2 second or a 3 second constriction in one of those five centers, then you're actually, your body is damaged. Okay? Like another part of a wrinkle appears. One or two hair starts to change color subtly. And this is real, okay? This is very important in Buddhist practice. In the higher stages of Buddhist practice, you have to use these facts to change the process. You see what I mean? We'll get to that sometime. But what I'm trying to say is that every time you have anger, not only does it destroy, you know, thousands of good karmas that you did through intense efforts, that's one thing, okay? But it also destroys your body. You see what I mean? It actually causes the aging process. Right? And now I'm not talking about an explosion of anger. I'm talking about daily, intermittent irritation, which I like to call low-level radiation. Okay, and this is from my days as a diamond dealer. We used to do diamonds, and we did about 40 other gemstones. Okay, one was topaz. Topaz is dug up in Sri Lanka and in Nigeria. The Sri Lankan topaz doesn't have... I forget what it is. It's like iron, but it's not iron. Anyway, it's an element. It's a trace element of a metal in it. The Nigerian does have this. You see what I mean? All topaz, most topaz out of the ground is colorless. Okay? And then you radiate it with electron radiation and neutron radiation and then electron radiation to make it this beautiful blue that you find in Penny's and Macy's, and we used to sell it to them. Okay? So, you know, I'm searching around the world for nuclear reactors that don't have anything to do. And, you know, and when you get a big, you get a kilo, 5,000 carats for like $2. And but you don't know if it's from Nigeria or Sri Lanka, see? The Nigerian stuff stays hot for about 1,000 years. The Sri Lankan stuff you can pull out in about 6 months, you see? So you just send it to Switzerland to be put into the reactor, you know, and then you pray, and you get this phone call, and they say, you got Sri Lankan, you know, and you're like, oh, man, because now it's worth maybe, you know, $25,000 or something like that, and that's how they make money. Then you cut it up into little pieces and like that. So I call the Atomic Energy Commission. Why? I'm curious if this is going to, like, deform the babies of the women working in my department or, you know, other things, like my hands are going to get worse or stuff like that, you know. And so I call them and I say, is this stuff dangerous or not? Is this safe? Like, they're selling it in the United States. Is this safe to do? And they say, well, it is allowed, you know. And I said, well, have you checked it, you know? And they said, well, there's no high-level radiation coming off it at all. And I said, no, that's not my question. I want to know if it'll hurt anybody. Because, you know, Mrs. Smith is wearing 1 carat, but my people are holding 5,000, 10,000 carats a day, you know. And will it hurt people? You know, and they said, well, there is this thing called low-level radiation, you know. And I said, what's that mean? And they said, well, you know, it gives off a lot more than you get from standing in the sun or something like that. You know what I mean? And so I said, well, then it's safe, right? And they said, not really, because it's accumulative. It never leaves your body. I mean, first year you get so many Rankins, second year you get so many Rankins. It's accumulative. It doesn't leave your body. You see what I mean? And so the longer you stay around it, the bigger the chances that it'll break a chromosome and you get cancer, right? So I'm like, so it's really not safe, is it? And they said, well, we can't tell you. And I said, why? And they said, we're not allowed to say anything because we'd get in trouble. We're not allowed to give an opinion because we could get sued on it. You know, but it's low-level radiation, okay? Which means that one moment of irritation during the day is not going to, like, choke your channels up and you have a heart attack. By the way, it can happen later, okay? But this constant irritation, and I'm talking every few seconds, every few minutes, hundreds of occurrences of low-level radiation, which are accumulative. You see, the effects on your inner spiritual body are accumulative. It's one thing for Master Shantideva to say, look, you get angry at somebody, you're going to blow 1,000 years of karma. That doesn't mean much to people who don't believe in karma or past lives. But if you say to somebody, guess what? You know, you just made yourself a little older, you know, a few more wrinkles. All the hair, the teeth, the hearing, the seeing, all your senses, the acuity of your senses and your mind are linked to the condition of those energies. You see what I mean? Every time you get slightly irritated at somebody, your breath shortens a bit because there's been a choking. What I want to say, and what I want you to realize, is that it's the low-level radiation. It's the moment-by-moment slight irritation with the people around you and the things around you that kills you. It creates mortality. It's responsible for the fact you have to die. Okay? It's one of the main factors that makes you get old. Okay? And everybody does it. And so everybody's getting older. You see, I mean, everybody can't control their mind in that subtle level from moment to moment. You see, I mean, and that's killing you. That's one of the main reasons why human bodies age. You see, I mean, everybody was looking for the fountain of youth, right? Ponce de Leon. And all this, you know, looking for eternal youth. It's there. You see, it's don't get angry. Don't have negative emotions. Every time you have so I'm not talking about controlling anger in the sense of don't have a blow up at your parents or your wife or your kids or something like that. I'm talking about don't be slightly irritated throughout the day as you walk around New York City streets, because that's killing you. And that's what turns your hair gray. That's what makes you age, okay? And you have to realize that. That's the real reason to study Sipa. We're not just talking, oh, it'd be nice if people in this room were more pleasant all day long. We're talking about, do you want to age or not? You know, do you want to... And by the way, that would imply that if you could reverse the process, you would get younger or not? Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, the goal of Buddhism is to reach a Buddha paradise. And it's not without cause. It's not like you just get the right roadmap and figure out the right door to go into or something like that. You actually go about the process of reversing the damage and opening up those things. And the whole idea is that at an advanced stage of that process, your body starts to change into something totally different. It's like living crystal or something like that. Your body changes completely. And then shortly after that, you become an enlightened being. And that's the whole goal of this process. So in the short run, it's a lot cheaper than cosmetics and stuff. And in the long run, we're talking, you have basically a choice. Everybody in this room has a choice. You can go normal way and die like most of the people around you. Or you can make extraordinary efforts to control your anger and your other negative emotions, and try to reverse the process. And that's the goal of Buddhist practice. Okay. So now we go back to, now that I've interested you in controlling even short-term anger. See, I'm talking small irritation at the temperature in this room. You know, small irritation at the way somebody else looks in the room. Small irritation with your shoes. You know, small little touches of jealousy in your mind towards somebody that just come and go like that. You know, each one of them is hurting you. Each one of them is damaging your body in a very subtle way and a constant way. You know, it's not illegal, right? It doesn't kill you. It doesn't give you cancer in 1 year. Over the course of a lifetime, it kills you. Okay, it's like the topaz. Okay, so you have to. We have to talk about tricks of how to stop anger. Okay, first one. So how do you get to the point where you don't care so much if somebody hurts you? The first one is just to think about how stupid it is. Okay, do you really want to die? Do you really want to get old? Or are you willing to just let it go this time? You see what I mean? And to me, the second one sounds better. Okay, just let it go. You know, what's the point? It doesn't help anything. All right, that's a kind of Nipala Jiminyampa means, okay, yeah, he said something to me. It's okay. I don't mind. It's all right. Just let it go. Just let it go. Easily said. Okay. Say, Dungya. Danglen. Dungya. Danglen. This is a band-aid approach. Okay. By the way, I'm saving the ultimate approach for after the refreshments so you come back. And maybe before, in case someone gets mad. Dungyal Danglen means Dungyal means pain or trouble. Danglen means take it on happily. Okay? Accept it. Surrender to it. Use it as a path. So I mean Dungyal Dangdalemba means take it on yourself and use it. And what it means is as problems come up in your life, stop looking at them as problems. Okay? Just change your worldview. Change your idea. Okay? I mean, there's some bodhisattva vows where you're supposed to see everybody in the world as being already an enlightened being and you're the only one left. Okay? It's kind of lonely sometimes. But, okay. I'm trying. But there's this thing where you view all the other people in the world as totally pure. And then they do something to you. You know, they say something bad to you. They say something bad about you. They do things to hurt you. And then you kick in this worldview, which is dagnang. Dagnang means decide. This person is somebody special. This is not just an accident. This person, you know, in the old days you'd say, oh, this is a godsend. This person has been sent to me by God to test me. And you're not going to fool me. I know who you are. You know, I mean, you're too obvious. You're too obviously an irritating person to be for real. You know what I mean? You gotta be sent on a special mission to strengthen my sopa. You know what I mean? And you just take it as an opportunity. You say, I really appreciate it. Master Shantideva calls it a strategic alliance. You know? They provide the object to get irritated at, you provide the irritation. And then you thank them. You know, like, how can I improve myself? How could I open my channels if I didn't have you around? You know what I mean? What? I would never have the opportunity. Take every irritating event as an opportunity. And I'm not talking, I think sometimes when Buddhists talk this way, it seems to be like make-believe, like you're supposed to make-believe it's an opportunity. Don't think that way. It is an opportunity, okay? There's a big distinction between let's make-believe it's an opportunity and then say it is an opportunity. Okay, just decide. There's nobody else left in the world who's normal. Everybody else got enlightened a million years ago. You were in the back of the class goofing off with Stillwell and Mark, you know. And you didn't catch that last few things, okay? And so you got left behind. And you're a million years behind. And everybody else is just pretending to be irritating on the subway to see if you got the lecture that night. You see what I mean? And just decide. It's just a decision. And you say, okay, everybody else is enlightened, and I'm the only schmuck left, and they're testing me. And they're just trying to see if I'll get upset, you know? And look at them that way. And just decide they are that way. Okay, you can pretend, or you can decide. I'm suggesting decide. The pretend thing doesn't work too well. Okay? You just decide. And without these kind of people around me, how could I ever become truly good? You know what I mean? I need people. Especially those one or two people who just with a single sentence can set you off. You know, Master, I told you this story many times. Master Atisha came to Tibet. He was already an old man. Somebody's paid his weight in gold or something to get him to Tibet. And he finally reached Tibet, and he's the greatest master in India. The Tibetans have been able to induce him to come to Tibet. Everybody's rejoicing. He's got hundreds of advanced, beautiful disciples. So who does he bring with him? The biggest dumbhead that he has, okay? The most irritating disciple he had, he drags around with him all the way to Tibet. We're talking risking his life as an old man to come over the Himalayan mountains. So who does he bring with him? This really idiot guy. You know, and the Tibetans are, they're so joyful to see Master Ajahn show up after all these years of trying to get him into Tibet. And then they get to know his disciple. And every day that they know the disciple, they're more and more disappointed. You know, it's like, and then finally somebody's like, you know, Lord Ajahn, you know, you're a great teacher and all, but why'd you bring this guy with you, you know? And he says, I always keep him close to me because I want to develop my patience. You know, I need someone like him around me constantly. You know, I designed it so that he would be closest disciple to me constantly, so that I would be tested constantly, and then I could become a really patient person, you know. Then there's this joke that he was traveling down the road in Tibet, and he's struggling to learn Tibetan. He's like Ken Rinpoche in 1972. You know, he's trying to learn some English, you know. So he's like, he's learning the words in Tibetan for different things. And he gets a pebble in his shoe. And he stops on the path, and they say, "What's wrong, Lord Ajahn?" And he says, "I have a pabong." Say pabong. Pabong means a boulder. And pabong ka means the lama from the boulder up above the Sera Monastery. Okay, but anyway, pabong means I have a boulder in my shoe, and all the Tibetans start laughing. Ha, 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 ha. You know, that's not, it's a pebble, it's a dew, it's not a pabong. And he's like, they're laughing at him and laughing, and he's looking around like that, you know. And he says, now I can send that guy back to India. Okay. And that's a true story. Anyway, so what I mean is, Dung Dilemma, the second kind of patience, means just decide that all the lousy things that are happening to you, especially people who come to you, are being sent to you on a special mission to test your patience, okay? And just decide, don't get angry at them, just thank them. You know, Master Shantideva says, thank them. It's very important to thank them, because by being patient, by being good and back to them, the karma to be around them will wear out. You see what I mean? If you react to somebody who bothers you by saying something bad to them or getting angry at them, you create more karma to have them in your life. And every time you're more patient, you create karma to lose them. You see? So if you keep responding happily to people who bother you, Master Shantideva says, be sure to shake their hand once in a while, because you won't see them after a while. They will drop out of your life. And I think if you've been practicing Buddhism well, which means if you've been keeping your vows well, if you've been keeping, we have a special diary that we keep, like every six times a day we stop, we make a notation, what's the condition of my mind right now? If you keep up this practice sincerely, you can actually observe that the irritating people and events in your life will get less and less. It's just amazing. It's like objectively checkable. You can test it, you know. The bad things in your life will just start getting less and less and less. And all these amazing things will start happening to you. You know what I mean? Just amazing things. Like you're trying to give up your possessions and people keep giving you more and more money. Or you're trying to you know, help people, and there's all the people around you are like beautiful and don't need help or something. And every time you help more and more people, then more and more beautiful people show up in your life. You see what I mean? And you keep going down to find somebody to help, and more and more people show up who are just beautiful and to be around. And what I mean to say is your whole reality starts to change. The low-level radiation's effect on your life is that hour by hour, day by day, it gets worse. You age. Your body ages. And the condition of your possessions also starts to wear out. Meaning, not only do you lose the vitality of your life, but your ability to earn drops year by year. And your ability to keep what you've earned drops year by year until finally there comes a day when you can't keep anything anymore because you're old and you're dying and everything is going to pass on to other people. You see what I mean? So you can go either way. Your whole karma can go in a big downward cycle to where all the things you're working for and your ability to work and your ability to earn money, your strength, your mind, your senses, your eyes, your ears, they're all on this downward cycle going worse and worse. Or you can reverse the process and then things just keep getting more and more beautiful around you. And this is the main thing, okay? Now I want to talk about the third kind of patience, which is the method, okay? Dungyal Dangdul Lemba is nice. It's a noble thought to think that if I think of all the problems in my life as being teachers, this is a beautiful thing. I can think of them that way. This is useful. But come on, when the poop really hits the fan, is it going to work? No. Okay? Okay? It's okay for like short term. Okay? It's okay on occasions. On certain situations, it works. You know? Okay, this person irritates me. Great. I'm so glad I didn't have to drag them over the Himalaya mountains. They were hired by my boss to sit next to me, you know. This is very convenient, you know. And thank my lucky stars, you know. And, you know, that lasts for a while. That's okay for a while. But it gets old, you know. It doesn't really get rid of them. And here's the way to get rid of them, okay? Say, chela, nghe thọc. Chela, nghe thọc. Chela means about your spiritual life. Nghe thọc means make powerful efforts. Okay? It's a kind of patience. It's a kind of not getting angry. You see, the first one, the important thing on the first one was somebody tries to hurt you and you respond with patience. The second one, someone tries to hurt you and you try to see it as an opportunity. In the third one, you are dealing with your own capacity to learn how to deal with it. You see what I mean? You're dealing with your spiritual capacity. And this is where you can think of it as being a tough guy. Spiritual tough guy. Okay? It means that you are willing to, what's it called? No pain, no gain. You're willing to put in the pain it takes to get good at it. You see what I mean? Nghe thọc means you're willing to undertake the sufferings necessary to get good at your spiritual life. You see, Kepa lobe dunadu, dewa duna kemisi, dewa chungla chapai, dewa chamba tomiyong, Sakya Pandita. Rinpoche made us memorize it the first thing when we got to his house 25 years ago. Okay, first thing he ever taught. Lobe lobe dunadu means during your study years, you're going to suffer. Dewa duna kemisi. Those who want to feel good all the time will never be great spiritual practitioners. Dewa chungla chapai, being attached to small pleasures, dewa chamba tomyo, prevents you from reaching ultimate pleasures. You see what I mean? So the point is to be willing to undertake the pain like a football player. You know what I mean? Like in practice, you know, of getting hit over and over again. And the pain it takes to get good at something, like a dancer, you know, a really serious dancer, it hurts. You know, I mean, they're a wreck by the time they're 30 or something. You know, the body's just been punished so often that they can't walk after a while. You see what I mean? And you have to be willing to, if you want to be great at something, you have to be willing to take the pain it takes to get good at it. And this third kind of patience is specifically a kind of patience with the time and the effort it takes to get good at spiritual practices. Okay? What has that got to do with patience? It's being willing to put in the hours of meditation and study related to understanding emptiness. Okay? Because that is the ultimate fix for anger. Okay? Number two is like a big band-aid, right? Like His Holiness, when he teaches patience to a public audience at St. John's Cathedral and his 5,000 people there, he only gets to number two. Think of your enemy as your teacher. You know, it sounds great. You know, and then you get pissed off the next morning at work and you forget about it. You know what I mean? It just evaporates in about 5 seconds. Okay? Really, as Arya Nagarjuna said, and all the great Buddhist wise men said, you have to understand emptiness to control your anger. Okay? To avoid anger, to avoid killing yourself, your own body, you have to understand emptiness. Okay? And that's the only way that will really work. Okay? This is number two, is a band-aid. Number three, to put in the time and take the pain it takes to get good. 18 ACI courses. You know, 1800 questions later. You know, it takes time, and it takes effort, and it takes guts, and it takes stamina over a 5 to 7 year period or something like that to sit there and get through it all, and then meditate for that long on a daily basis for an hour or two a day. And just, you feel, I hear people, it's funny, it's too hot to meditate, it's too cold to meditate, I'm too tired, I'm too wired, you know, I'm too busy, I'm too bored, I don't have time, I got too much time on my hands. But it's all an excuse to not meditate, you know, or it's an excuse to not practice, or an excuse to not study. I don't like the classes. You know, they're too hard for me, they're too easy for me, they're too long for me, they're too short for me. The teacher talks too funny, the teacher doesn't talk funny enough. And it's always this, you know, what's ironic is you hear exactly opposite excuses from different people for the same thing, which is why I don't have to study or meditate. You know what I mean? And you have to study emptiness. You will never reverse the process of aging. You will never fix the thing in your channels from one Friday night lecture. Forget it. It's impossible. You've got to be willing to put in the pain it takes and to understand emptiness. I'll tell you really quickly why emptiness works about it, and then we'll take a break. Someone attacks you. Someone says something bad about you. Okay? Someone attacks your character or something like that. And it hurts. Okay? Then you look at them and you say, I could either respond in an ignorant way, or I can, a stupid way, call it Dharma stupid way, okay? Or I can respond in a Dharma intelligent way. What's the stupid way? Stupid way says, this person came from themselves. The reason this person is talking bad about me, the reason this person is saying something bad about me, is that they don't like me, and they're stupid, okay? Now, what should I do? Talk them out of it? Punch them, try to attack them. You see what I mean? Make up some stuff about them, try to hurt them the way they hurt me. You know what I mean? These are all the things that come to your ignorant mind, okay? Then there's approach number two, which is emptiness way. What's it say? This person is neither good nor bad from their own side. Okay? What's that mean? This morning, I was walking across an intersection. This guy swerved out of the way, almost killed me. You know, like, I felt the breeze go by. I heard the takeoff of the tires with the green light, and then I just felt this breeze, and I'm like, man. And then he parked like 20 feet down. So I just walked down, and I stood in front of the window, you know, and I said, and he rolls down the window, what do you want, you know, and I said, you almost just killed me, you know, and he said, yeah, but I didn't, you know, and I'm like, you know, you know, and I'm just staring at him, you know, and he's got this big Doberman Pinscher in the back, and the dog goes, you know, and he's licking the guy's face, while I'm trying to convince him that he just killed me, you know, so this proves the emptiness of this guy, okay? I'm not kidding, this is true. It proves the emptiness of this guy. Why? Okay, he's neutral, okay? To the dog, he appears wonderful. You see what I mean? I'm not kidding. The dog has a different karma than me, okay? The dog has the karma to see this person as their favorite person. You know, while I'm trying to explain to him he almost killed me, the dog is licking him, you know? I'm not kidding, you know? And it struck me at that moment, you know? The dog loves this guy. You know, and I'm like feeling very upset about this guy at the same moment. You know what I mean? That's the emptiness of a person, and never forget it. It's not just a joke. I'm not just trying to tell a joke. It's true. That person is therefore empty. okay? They do not have a quality of being a good guy or a bad guy. What?
From
their own side. Okay, that's what emptiness means. From his own side, he's neutral, blank, empty. They all mean the same thing. He's just a hunk of meat there moving around with this wheel. The dog likes that hunk of meat. I don't. Okay? No, and that's his emptiness. You see what I mean? That is his emptiness. In and of himself, he has to be neutral. Or else the dog, or else two separate beings couldn't have two separate opposite impressions of him at the same time. Those impressions have to be coming from where? Me and the dog. Not him. Okay? The impression of him as a sweet guy is coming from the dog's mind because he has good karma about the guy. And the impression of him as a deadly killer, you know, is coming from my mind because I have the bad karma about the guy. In and of himself, he's empty. Okay? What's this got to do with being patient? Why is this the ultimate way not to get angry at the guy? And I did get angry. Like, it upset me that I got angry. You know what I mean? And which is another thing that makes you angry, right? So I'm looking at him and what's the, why did this guy occur in my life? You have to ask that. Why did this guy occur in my life? This morning at 8th Street and 1st Avenue, whatever. Why? Because I hurt somebody, or almost hurt somebody. I scared the hell out of somebody, okay? And therefore this guy has appeared in my life. Okay, I have hurt someone, therefore this guy has appeared in my life. He's saying bad things to me, and I'm saying, you know, I'm hearing these bad things because I said something bad to someone in the past. Okay, the proof of that is that the dog is not hearing at all what I'm hearing. Apparently, whatever the dog heard, it was worth a lick. Okay, it was the same words, and they were said with the same emotion, but the dog just made it a point to lick him. You know what I mean? From the back seat, like. You know, and then I'm having this, I'm perceiving the same object, but I'm perceiving it as something very bad. You see, I mean, that's due to something bad in my mind. I have a bad karmic imprint, is coming up from my subconscious mind, comes up to my conscious mind, colors my perception of this neutral object. Okay? So, what would be the only way to get him to come back again? To yell at him. What's the natural human reaction? Yell at him. And I did, okay? I couldn't stop it. Now, if I had remembered emptiness about 8 hours ago, I would have stopped it. That's all. Just remember his emptiness. The last thing a Buddhist wants to do is to have this guy back in your life. You know? The last thing. Eliminate him, okay? Not with a gun, you know, not by calling the police. Eliminate him how? Just cut it. Just stop it. Unilateral withdrawal. You see what I mean? Just stop. Just say, I don't like this anymore, so I'm going to walk away. You know what I mean? I don't want to see you again, so I'm going to walk away happy. So I walked away, but I wasn't quite happy, okay? But just stop. That's the ultimate patience. You see what I mean? That's patience with perfection. That becomes the perfection of patience. Perfection means using wisdom and knowledge. Using your understanding of karma and emptiness. This guy is empty screen. Prove it. The dog sees him as wonderful, saying the same things to me when I see him as miserable. Okay? So how do you get out of seeing this guy again? You do not collect the karma that's going to make you see him again. What's the karma to make you see him again? Oh, say something bad to him. Go up to his window and, you know, something like that. And then you'll be sure to see him again. You see what I mean? And that's all. That's the ultimate wisdom patience. Patience with wisdom is unique. There's nothing like it. Okay? Nothing works like wisdom. You see, it's one thing to say, ha, you almost killed me. I could do a death meditation this afternoon. You know? That's number two. Okay? Number three is deeper. Number three lasts forever. Number three gets you to a Buddha paradise. You see what I mean? I understand that if I respond to you right now with anger, I'll have to meet you again. I just assume meet Maitreya, if you don't mind. So, you know, I'm going to not respond to you right now. And that's being patient with wisdom, and that becomes the perfection of patience. The perfection, bodhisattva activity, means when you understand the emptiness of that person, then you've perfected patience. Okay? Will that remove all the negative people in your life? Slowly it does. It doesn't work immediately. Don't expect it to. Things take time to mature. Okay? But eventually it will. Two short questions, and then we really need a refreshment, I think. Yeah. Yeah, she asked, is the fact that I got angry a result of my past karma? Yes. There are four results of karma. One of them is called Gyutengyidebu. Is that Gyutengyidebu? Anyway, one of them is the, what do you call it? It's the perpetuation of the tendency to do that. You see what I mean? One of the bad things about killing is not that you're going to get killed, or that your life's going to get short, or that you might go to a hell realm. It's that you will enjoy killing in your next life. You'll be one of those people who is kind of attracted to killing. And so one of the worst things about anger is that it sets up the tendency to be angry later, more. Okay, yeah.
What about anger at your own anger?
There is a concept of righteous anger in Buddhism, okay? Those of you who studied Lojong Tsunje Korlo, the Crown of Knives, halfway through this beautiful poetry, the guy says, I figured out who's giving me my problems. And he turns into a tantric, wrathful deity, and he says, you. And he's, who's he talking to? His own selfishness. You see? And so he does go into this thing where he does this dance, and he says, chem, 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 you know? And he's going after his own anger. But then the commentaries are careful to say he's not angry, you know. He's just going to kick butt in a positive way. You know, he's going to say, I'm tired of getting almost run over all day, you know. Therefore, I'm not going to get angry anymore. And please don't be stupid anymore. With all respect, you're a real tough guy, but please don't be stupid. Just walk away. So, because I don't want to see this guy anymore. And it's a very calm... It is a kind of disgust with your anger, but it's very calm, it's very reasonable, it's very powerful, it's very controlled, the breathing is going very sweet, you know, there's no chokes on the channel, and you're like, hey, we're not going to do this anymore, okay? It's very calm and very powerful. At the same time, it's very powerful, okay? Take a break, and we'll do a little bit after that, okay? Okay, we'll start again. After they go through the incident of the stickers, the thorns, and all that, then they go and they sit in a corner, and the young man kind of spaces out in the garden, and he's sort of relaxing, and he went through this trauma of having someone he thought was a spiritual teacher push him around and actually hurt him to teach him something. But finally, towards the end of it, he starts to get it. And he's sort of like feeling relaxed, but his feet hurt, and his knees hurt, and his pants are wet. And he kind of leans back, and he's thinking about it, and he's kind of spacing out, and he's thinking the lesson is over for the night, you know. And then the master says, come, you know, and he says, why? And he says, I thought you wanted to help your mother. And his mother had died like years before, and part of the reason he's going to the garden is to find out what happened. You know, he was in a religion that said that there's this person who makes all the people in the world, and then his mother died, and his mother was a good person, and he doesn't understand why good people have to die. And he's like, it bothers him a lot, and he's like, he can't make sense of the universe, and it bothers him that good people have to die, and that they can't understand why. And that's one of the reasons he's been coming to the garden, you know, because the old explanation he got from his third grade school teachers and doesn't satisfy him. He says, I don't see why someone would make people and then kill them. You see, I mean, there has to be some other reason why this is going on. And it's part of his search. So he's kind of thinking maybe if he did it well and he could meditate properly, maybe, possibly, one day he could find his mother who's died already, you know what I mean? And so this monk is saying, come, it's time to get up. And he says, why? I'm tired. You know, I went through all this stuff with you tonight. And he's like, no, you have to get up. You have to help your mother. You have to come see your mother, you know. And he gets, he like gets up right away, you know, he's like, oh yeah, where? You know, he says, come with me, you know, and then suddenly he's got all this energy, you know, and then really it's sort of a trick because he's not going to see his mother right away. And it's not like his mother is waiting outside this magic garden or anything, and he's disappointed, and he says, you know, why did you get all my hopes up? You know, and he says, I just wanted to prove to you that if you really want to do something, you can do it. And that's called effort, okay? That's the next of the perfections, okay? I'm not going to spend long on it. It's already late. But it's worth talking about for a second. Say, Tsundu. Tsundu. Tsundu is the fourth of the Buddhist perfections, and it means, they translate it as effort. But the text says, in the classic form, it's called Tsunkang Gela Trowa O. Say, Tsunkang Gela Trowa O. This is the definition of Master Shantideva, of the fourth perfection, which is Tsundu. Tsundu means joyful effort, to be happy to do something, to get up because you think your mother's going to be there. You see what I mean? And you're happy to get up. It's not like somebody has to force you up. You know, you're like, yeah, I want to do that. Yeah. So it's like being willing to, being happy to make effort. And what it means is that when it's time to do your Buddhist practice, whether it's meditation or study or helping some old person or sick person, that you're like, yeah, let me at it, you know, like you're just like, nobody can hold you back, you know, you're like obsessed with it, you know, you spend up all night doing it. You know, when I first came to study with my Lama, I asked him, is there a way that I can stop sleeping? You know, and he said, why do you want to? And I said, I could use the 12 hours, you know, or whatever, you know, I mean, I'd like to have the time back. And is there some ancient Tibetan method that you don't have to sleep anymore? And he said, no. And then years later, just stop sleeping so much and don't need to sleep so much because of Tsundu. Tsundu means just happy to do good stuff. You know what I mean? You're so turned on to do Buddhist practices that you don't want to go to sleep. You see what I mean? And that's how you don't sleep. It's not like they sprinkle something on your head or you do some special meditation and fall asleep. Okay? It's that you're just so turned on by it that you don't need to sleep. You don't feel like sleeping. And you don't get weird. You just, the excitement or the happiness of the virtue is like sleeping. You see what I mean? And you're just like, yeah, I don't need to sleep so much. And it's not like you have to force yourself or something like that, or you have to, you know, pretend you're not sleeping and you are sleeping or something like that. You just don't feel like sleeping. Because you have so much exciting things to do, virtuous things, and then you just don't want to sleep, and you don't sleep, and you don't sleep as much, okay? And you feel great, you feel fine, you feel normal, you see what I mean? And you're doing beautiful things, and that's Tsundu. Tsundu means that kind of excitement about doing good deeds, you know what I mean? It's where you just feel a thrill goes up your spine, you know. Somebody says, would you like to stay late and clean up the hall at the school? And you're like, ooh, yeah, you know. You know, and you just get this thrill up your spine, you know. And, you know, it's not normal, right? So how do you get there? There's three kinds. There's always three kinds. Okay. These are the three things obstacles you overcome, and then you get what we call tsundu. Tsundu means effort, okay? Say, chishul, lelo. Chishul, lelo. Chishul means to put it off till later. Chi means later, shul means to put it off. Lelo means, it's one of the few Tibetan words that sounds like what it means in English. Lelo means laziness. It's the Tibetan word for laziness. So chishul lelo means the kind of laziness where you just think constantly you should put it off. And I'm talking about your practice. And I'm talking about Buddhist meditation. It took me 25 years to get into a normal schedule of daily practice. You know, it took me that long. And I was a good Buddhist and a good monk. And I wanted to study. And I was serious about it. But to really get to the discipline of respecting my practice time inviolably, whatever, never breaking it, took 25 years. You see, just a decision to say from this hour to this hour, I do not do anything else. Period. No matter what, I don't do anything else. You know what I mean? And that's just a kind of tsundru. That's a kind of decision that you have to make. You can do it now, you can do it later. Sooner or later, you have to do it. Okay? You have to make a time that this is when I'm going to do my meditation, and it is sacred. And nothing, there's nothing else I do during that time. And it takes a lot of blessings, and it takes, like, I had some really good help to finally be able to do it, but it's very difficult. And you know, I'm sincere, I'm very sincere Buddhist, but it took that long to truly respect that time and to make it the most important thing no matter what. And sooner or later you have to do it, okay? That's sundu. And it's kind of a thing where if you keep doing your meditation every day, you get good at it. When you get good at it, you want to keep doing it. You see what I mean? So you just have to go over that threshold to where it's uncomfortable for a while. It's like anything else that you learn. But you have to put in that time, you have to get over that. And then it's, when you're good at it, you want to keep doing it all the time. But you have to invest time in that curve, okay, to where you get good enough at it that it's what you want to do all the time. Okay, there's a very beautiful instruction in a Vajrayogini commentary by Luchu Dhammabhadra. It's called Chamdo Drona Chamiche. Chamdo Mindrona Cham. I'm sorry. Chamdo Drona Chamche. Chamdo Mindrona Chamche, which means, if your meditation's going well, stop. If your meditation's not going well, stop. And then you're like, what are you talking about? And it says, you should get to the point, make your meditation short enough that while it's going well, you call it off. You know, you're just into the middle of a beautiful meditation, or let's say you're like 60% through it or 70% through it, and before you burn out, you stop. You say, let's stop there. It's going really good. How long does that take for a normal person? 8 minutes? 10 minutes? I'm not kidding. The great Sakya masters of Vajrayogini say 12 minutes, if you're lucky. Okay? 12 perfect minutes of meditation. Then say, okay, that's enough. Come out of it happy. You know what I mean? Then rest for a few minutes and then go back. You see what I mean? But the idea is that you never reach a point where you're bored or tired or burning out in the meditation. And don't think that we're talking an hour or 2 hours of meditation. 10 minutes of real concentration is great, you know. How long does it take to watch a good music video? You know, they've got it down. We were at CNN. They asked some of us to help translate a video about His Holiness the Dalai Lama, right? And we translated. It took 3 days to translate 10-minute cuts, you know. And then they said, how do you like the show? They showed us the finished show, you know. And I said, it's weird, you know. You guys put the best part. There's this part where His Holiness is teaching a nun how to die, and how to die right. And I said, why did you put that like 8 minutes into the show? Why don't you put it at the beginning? It's so powerful, you know. And they said, oh no, you don't know anything about TV. 8 minutes is the channel switch time. You see, you can only keep an American's attention for 7.6 minutes. And you have to put the most interesting thing at 8 minutes into the show, because then they won't switch the channel. You see what I mean? So we actually aim it from 7 to 9 minutes is when the sexy part has to happen, or else they change the channel. You know what I mean? And what I'm saying is that pure meditative attention, to have 10 pure minutes of meditative attention, is rare. You see what I mean? And while you're into it and you're having a good time, stop, rest, take a few minutes off, go back into it. You see, I mean, especially at the beginning. And this is how you do the most advanced practices of Tantra, like that too. They say split the day into 30 sessions. Okay, and they're all like 12 to 15 minutes each, and you're just very deep into it, come out of it while you're still enjoying meditating. You see what I mean? And if after 6 minutes you don't feel so good, stop. Okay, stop also. The point is, do it well. Get into it and be really into it, and then get out of it before you're not so happy about it. You see what I mean? And then you have this joy about meditating. They say, there's a joke in Tibetan, that when you see your meditation seat, you'll say, oh, hi, how are you? You know, and you won't be, you know, don't want to look at your meditation seat. You know, you get this emotion when you see your meditation seat. It's like, ooh, man, I wish I could sneak another meditation in today. You see, I mean, how many people say that? So it's like to take joy, to have some joy about it. Chishu Lelo means don't think you're going to do it later. That's a lie, okay? Don't think you're going to do that meditation later. Don't put it off one day. Don't put it off 1 hour. You just killed your chances of being a good meditator, okay? The minute you put off one session, you're dead. You might as well stop, you know? To think that you can put off one session, 1 day, 1 hour, to hope for next month or next year, or when your job situation clears up, or when you're over this next project, it's death. It doesn't work, okay? Tonight, start. Tomorrow morning, start. Now, okay? And that's, you gotta stop that kind of lelo. Okay, second kind of lelo. Say, Chang'en. Cha. Chang'en. Cha. Chang'en means lousy stuff to do. Cha means bad. Cha means to do. Nyen means bad. When you want to insult somebody in Tibet, you say, I don't remember. It means dog face. Or it's a way to insult somebody in the monastery. Anyway, chak means to be attracted to doing evil deeds, okay? But evil deeds means watching TV, enjoying the New York Times. You know, you can get the New York Times. My students know who walk around me in New York. In the morning, I always go over to the... I kind of like to torment this Indian guy. He thinks he's going to sell me a newspaper. And I glance at the headlines, and sometimes I turn it over and get the thing at the bottom of the front page, and then I just let it go and walk away, you know. He's like... And I almost feel like I stole the New York Times from him, you know. That's all you need. That's all the information. Okay, they got the black box. They don't know anything more than they knew before. You know, okay, and that's all you need. You don't need to read the details about what they don't know. You see, I mean, you know all you need to know. That's all you need to know. Jangen Chakpa means you just get attached. You get attached to doing things that are not very meaningful. They're not very helpful. And it's just a form of laziness. You are giving up your holy meditation that would turn you into a tantric angel in this lifetime in order to find out what they don't know about the black box. You know what I mean? No, really, I'm not kidding. You see, that's the choice you make every hour of the day, and you make the wrong choice. Because you're just, it's a kind of laziness, it's a kind of thoughtlessness. You just didn't think about it like that. You know, somebody said, hey, would you rather be Manjushri or know what didn't happen with the black box? You know, and then you said, well, Manjushri. And they said, well, why are you standing there reading about it? You say, I mean, go meditate for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, you know, do something useful. You see, I mean, you don't have infinite lifetime. You don't have infinite thought time. Your thoughts are limited. The number of thoughts you can think are numbered. You know, you're on number 5,437,365. And you've got 1,200,317 left. Now, what are you going to do with them? You know, or how many, you can't splurge those thoughts. They're like a credit card. It's a debit card, actually. And you're just going to run out of thoughts. And you only have so many things you can think about. So you got to give up something. You got to give up, you know, TV shows and New York Times past the front page headlines. Sometimes, okay, you can go to the New York section. Or you can skip straight sports, but don't do the New York section, okay? But just get it in 1 minute and then let it go and leave it alone and go meditate for 5 minutes or go look at a Dharma book for 5 minutes. Do something. Help somebody for 10 minutes, okay? Do something with those hours of your time. Try to change the channels in your body. You don't have much time. It's hard, okay? I mean, I make it sound easy. It's not. It's very, very difficult. And you need to concentrate. You need to put some effort into it. You have to have some time to do it. And it's not going to happen that easy. It takes a very, very concentrated effort. It's about as difficult as learning to play piano well. You got to think in terms of that kind of commitment, okay? Otherwise, you might as well just, you know, I don't know, go to the movies or something, okay? All right. By the way, does it mean that you can't go to the movies? Not at all. It's the right spiritual thing at a special time. There's a time for everything. The Bible's right? there's a time when you have to go to a movie. If you're a spiritual practitioner who's serious, there's a time to let up and go see a movie so that you can be a better bodhisattva for it. You see what I mean? So don't think like that. There's a time to relax. There's a time for entertainment. And Lord Buddha was adamant about it. In the monastery, we have my favorite 2 weeks in the monastic schedule. It's called Gaye. Say Gaye. Gaye is right after Yarne. Yarne is the summer kick butt retreat study period when you're supposed to stay inside for maybe 3 months and study hard. And then Gaye comes after that. All the rules are open. Suddenly all these cassette tape recorders show up in the monastery. Who knows where they came from, you know? But everybody's got Sting on and playing music. And suddenly all these Karim boards show up. It's like hockey thing like that, you know? Who knows where they were for the whole year, but suddenly they're there, you know? People can play soccer. You know, people can goof off, and you can sit around and eat all day. You don't. There's no restrictions for 2 weeks, beyond a certain point. And it's like that. And you need that time. Okay, I'm not talking about that. That's necessary at certain times, but not all the time. Last one is called Giluk. Say Giluk. Giluk. Giluk is a very weird word. If you know Tibetan, you know it's a weird word. It only appears in certain places. Giluk means to think you can't do it. Okay? It's the idea you have about yourself that, oh yeah, maybe Milarepa, maybe Nagarjuna, maybe Atisha, maybe Jatankapa, but me? You know, I can reach tantric enlightenment in my lifetime, you know? I don't think so. You know, I don't see how I could. I'm just a plain old schmuck. You know, I'm a plain old New Yorker, you know. How could I do what the Dalai Lamas have done or the Panchen Lamas have done? You know, I don't live in a monastery. I don't get Buddhist teachings all day. I don't debate. I don't meditate in a cave. How could I ever reach that goal of being a tantric deity in this lifetime? You know, if Giluk is that, Giluk is like thinking that you can't do it, okay? And it's the final obstacle to tsundru. Okay, and it's stupid. Okay, if you are in this room, if you heard about emptiness in this room tonight, you are automatically one in a million. You are already one in a million people. You know, for every person in this room who's hearing about these ideas, if they're true, they can lead you to total enlightenment in this lifetime. For every person here, there's 999,999 who didn't hear it. And who aren't interested in it, and who don't think it's possible at all, and who could care less about all this stuff. You see, I mean, you are already, you know, Lord Atisha was adamant that people should recognize, people in a crowd like this should understand, you are one in a million already. You know, you have worked lifetime after lifetime, thousands of lifetimes, you have worked to get here. Your mind is already extraordinary. You know, whatever job you have, whatever credit card bills you have, you know, whatever people think of you, it doesn't matter. On the spiritual scale of things, every person here is the cream of a million people, you know, and you are listening about karma and emptiness. You have a chance to change your body into something extraordinary. You know, on the spiritual scale, you are way off the you know, aptitude, whatever. You know, you're off the scale. You're extremely rare people. To live in a country where these thoughts and these ideas are not even talked about, and to have come in contact with it, and to have the karma to make your way through a million people and get to the front of the line and connect with what you're hearing tonight, it truly means that automatically you're spiritually you're a genius. You know, spiritually you have a what do you call it? Aptitude. Your spiritual aptitude is I'm not exaggerating, one in a million. Okay, in the United States of America tonight, how many people are talking about seriously about the possibility of not dying, and about the possibility of changing into a different kind of being? You are one in a million. And who has connected with an authentic tradition for doing that? You know, you're one in a million. You know, Ken Rinpoche was the highest graduate out of, I don't know, 30,000 monks 1954, okay, in Lhasa. And he's free giving teachings an hour from here. And you have it. You know what I mean? You have direct access to this tradition. There's nobody like that. I mean, those of you who go to Sera Monastery this winter, you'll see there's nobody like that. That doesn't exist anymore. You know, there are, I think, 4 Lhasa Geshe's left from Tibet. And he's one. And you met him. You know, you hooked up with this tradition. It's unbelievable. You see, I mean, you've done something that no one else can do. So you don't have to think, oh, I couldn't do that, or I'm not capable of doing that. You have a unique, the American training so far. To you, you think it's just stupid. You know, grade school was stupid, stupid teachers, stupid people. High school was stupid, college was stupid. My work is stupid, you know. But actually, it's great training. You have been trained very, very well. You know, your karma got you into a very affluent society. You don't have to work all day to make a living. You've been trained to read and write at a very sophisticated level. In the history of the world, you are unique. You live in a country where there are absolutely no obstacles to doing whatever the hell you want spiritually. You know what I mean? You're totally free to do what you want. You can go to Arizona and sit in a tent for 3 years, or you can sit in New York and in a corporate office and go home and do tantra. You know what I mean? You have total freedom to do all those things. You are, in the history of the world, just to sit here, you're unique. You know, you're very special. You are very close to reaching these things. Just go a little further and you're done. You see what I mean? And so you don't have to have giluk. Giluk is something you don't need. Okay, you are very special. If you made it here, that's all you need. Okay, then you just need to push a little bit harder, and you got it. You see what I mean? To some totally different level of being, where you don't get old, you don't have to have any kind of suffering and no kind of pain around you. Totally free. You know, you have all of those things. You just have to do it. Okay, so that's all. Did I have some announcements to make? I don't remember. What was that? Oh, anybody who would... Where is that lady? Okay. A few short announcements. We have a store. Maybe you know it turned into an outreach center because we were so lousy at running a store. And it serves many people very sweetly. And as of December 1st, Pelma will begin traveling in Asia, and then she'll be going into 3-year retreat. We'd like to see if there's people who are interested in helping out at the store. Nobody gets paid there. We serve the community. Tea, coffee are free. All the activities there are free. Meditation every day. But if you're into that kind of thing where you'd like to help out with that, please talk to Ellie. Okay, she's right here. Okay, and we need help with that. That's about all I think. Anything else? Ten Rinpoche, for those of you who don't know, you must know by now, but anyway, this Sunday he will teach a very special teaching on the tantric vows. You have to have Vajrayogini initiation, or Yamantaka or Chakrasambhara, something like that. Kala Chakra is not enough, okay? So, if you don't know about that, talk to Ellie too. Did you have something I should? Oh, I think I'll leave it. Yeah. Okay. See you. The last two classes, I think they are the next two Fridays. One is on emptiness, and the other is on sort of like tantric enlightenment. So I would, don't miss those two. Okay. They are the last two Friday night classes that I'll teach for the next 3 or 4 years. So yeah. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay, it's next week and then 2 weeks after that. And by the way, these courses will go on next year and for the next 3 years, but other teachers will be teaching them, very good teachers. So we'll have a steady thing going, and we'll give you the dates. I think next Friday we'll be able to give you the dates for that. It'll pick up in early next year, okay? But we're on for next Friday and then 2 weeks from Friday, I think, okay? All right, we'll do a short prayer, okay?
Shiva Gita Shiva Dantam Viravin Shiva Yenge Yenpa
Thank you.